Did you take a specific physical chemistry course as an undergraduate?
Yes, I took the elementary physical chemistry, but it was by an extreme. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. That was really also very exciting. As you can see, it was all very exciting. The physical chemistry course was given by E.B. Wilson, Jr., who had just gotten appointed not too long before. He was full professor at 29, which is, and I mention that because he was vibrant, exciting, and it tied in very nicely with another course I took the same year, which was a philosophy course, but my section man was somebody who, but at the same time I took a course, this was 1936, in atomic physics by Oldenburg.
Hmm.
And this was, of course, well before the atomic bomb, so it was a very good basis for that. But the interesting thing was that the section man in that field was, in that course, was someone who had gotten his degree or worked with Eddington in physiology. Mm-hmm. And so the combination of these three things was really, as I say, very exciting and very nice. The physical chemistry courses, you know, with the laboratory and all those, was just very good. And of course I also had organic chemistry with Fieser.
Oh, with Fieser, okay.
Yeah, so that was very, very, very special. He was as a teacher, was sparkling and so forth. On the other hand, I think it was a little unfortunate because the chemistry at that time was just before the, at least as far as teaching goes, the electronic presentation. And so we still, even though it was exciting and done well, it was still the old-fashioned organic chemistry. And I must admit, I've tried hard to make up for it, but it's hard to make up for not having that as a basic course, and because it was, there was almost none of the new materials then, because it had just come out. Well, I mean, I have to emphasize, it's fun to talk about this, but it's, as I say, it's not really, I think, relevant to what.
Well, I think it's all very
to what you. It's what you want me for.
Well, no, but I think it's important. I like to go back and look at this background in some detail to look at these windows on curriculum, on departments, and what people were like. You've mentioned Wilson and Fieser, and of course Fieser stories abound.
But of course, as I guess you know better than I do, even these things all perhaps add up together, so even if it's not relevant to me or to what we're talking about, some of it might be relevant to the general picture of other people who
What about mathematics?
I just had the routine kind. I just had that at City College. I didn't have any of that at Harvard. I went through, you know, the usual calculus and, you know, differential equations, but nothing. That's a real loss too, because there again, I got a lot out of that, but unless you go a little further, you don't have that feeling for it that makes it very easy to follow up, you know, articles in that direction. And later on, which we'll get to later in seminars and so forth here, we once had a series on quantum mechanics, and if you don't have a good background in math, it's impossible. So I wish I could have taken more math. on the other hand, wish I had taken more of the social of the literature and so forth too. So I mean, you can't. Unfortunately, yes, there wasn't enough time.
You mentioned that you roomed with a friend from City who was in geology.
Yeah.
Were there any other classmates, any other relationships you developed while you were there as an undergraduate?
Quite a few, but not much. But most of them were people that I kept up with, yes. But many of them, of course, were people who went on in science mm-hmm. or medicine later, and I've kept up with over the years, yeah. But it was a very good place from that point of view. Again, that was quite different from commuting to college, which I did earlier. And so this was really a very important aspect of the period.
Would you say that John Edsel was influential on you at that point in terms of your future career? You mentioned his...
No, I don't think so. I think just the biochemistry in John. He wasn't my personal tutor. He was chairman of the board. On the other hand, I think they all were. I mean, people like John Edsel were, thoughtful. Exciting. No one would usually classify John as, I hope this doesn't go into the type record, but no one would usually classify John as exciting, but in a real sense, he does represent science as you like to think of it, everybody who was, it was all very exciting, for the most part, I had my mind made up on what I really wanted to do, so you can't say that it was one person.
I guess what I'm looking for is is using an MD as a practicing physician as opposed to doing science. And whether you had thought about those two tracks.
Well, I think from what I said, from some of these books that everybody in that period read, and from what I said, you didn't realize the distinction. I mean, in other words, I think... Well, at least they planned to go into medicine from the scientific point of view. Now, I don't think I intended to stay out of the practice of medicine completely, but I certainly did not intend to do the very local mm-hmm. medical practice. But and by the way, the other thing I should mention, continually, just for a historic basis, that what I said about the City College held to a certain extent, but a much lesser extent, at Harvard too, and it's still a real defect that I'm sure you're familiar with and has come up in the whole pre-medical training, and that is there's still a difficulty in getting into medical schools, perceived or otherwise, and even if the percentages are high. And I think what it does is it forces the undergraduate to not take as much advantage as he should of the other aspects of the university. I feel fortunate that I think I did. Nevertheless, between the time of the laboratory courses taken, general, pressures mm-hmm. of getting into medical school, I think that I can't underestimate that aspect. And it's still true, I'm afraid, from what I hear. I don't know the answer, but it's a little unfortunate.
Having taught chemistry for 30 years in a liberal arts school where there were a number of pre-med students...
You understand the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying.
Although I guess for the most part, medical schools provided the students are good, prefer someone from a small school. Or didn't you find that?
We had some very good success rates at several of our students went to Harvard and Penn, and we had a, if they were good, they were pretty successful. But it's that attitude that you see, especially early on in the first 2 years. There's a particular attitude of the student that is almost anti-intellectual.
It's really much too bad.
Not learning for the fun of learning, but that's worrying about a long-term goal instead.
Yeah, I think in that sense, even though it wasn't completely the case, what I was thinking about the excitement and so forth, and how there was enough of the atmosphere of learning, of the intellectual goal of people, of other people who were in other disciplines, including the whole graduate schools around, that perhaps affected the amount of the pressures of the pre-medical curriculum. But I can't underestimate the fact that there was that pressure, of course. Yeah.
It must have been pretty intense at City then, if you had this large number of students who had that goal and virtually knowing how their success rate was going to be very low.
Yes, but not as much as you... Yes, but not... but not quite the way you're saying it, because... that was the way it was. I mean, that was the way everyone was, and you just did. I think people did the best they could, and I never got the feeling that there was any, shall we say, cutthroat competition of any kind. In other words, everyone tried to do what they did best, and perhaps I was naive and didn't realize it. But I think, I mean, everyone worked very hard who was in this group, but I never thought of it as competition. Let's put it that way. Yeah, I think that's relevant. Yeah, but a lot of these things, as you know, at the time you're doing it, you're either not sophisticated enough to know, or you don't think of what the overall picture is. I mean, this is just what you did, you know.
Do you think that people at that time were perhaps more accepting of the status quo, the conditions that were around them, as opposed to fighting those conditions to change them?
I think it would vary a lot with the people. I think it would vary a lot with the people. It certainly is not true in terms of what you were asking before, of those people who were... aware of the social economic aspects of things. I think perhaps people were more adjusted to other social barriers and limitations, but certainly the group both at City College and at Harvard were not happy with the economic inequities in society. Perhaps at Harvard it was a less personal thing, it was a more in many cases a more conceptual thing, that the rights and wrongs of society. Mm-hmm. And of course so
would you have classified Harvard as being more conservative than City at that time?
Well, certainly across the board it would be, because there was a fair percentage of conservative people there. On the other hand, are the people who were, shall we say, liberal, or I would say probably not, but I think obviously the percentage was much smaller. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it, And it was a much more, shall we say, intellectual liberalism. The thing I do find a little surprising, thinking back on it, compared to nowadays, is there was very little that I remember of real activism. I don't remember people being, people were very opinionated in terms of, presidential elections and being, you know, shall we say, pro-Roosevelt or pro-Deal, but I don't remember them working for the Democratic Party or what have you. And I'm excluding a small number that, you know, might have worked for left-wing parties and so forth, but in general, there was a real interest, a real intellectual discussion. But one of the things I find a little bit amazing is that I don't remember people taking political action in, say, a presidential campaign. But perhaps I just didn't know what was going on.
As opposed to city, where I would expect that would have been more.
Even there, I'm not sure. There was activism in terms of, I don't really remember. But there again, I don't remember people participating as part of the regular electoral process at all. But again, I was only 2 years in each place, so that I may be giving there I may be giving a wrong impression. I did know a number of people over at the law school, and that was sort of interesting too at the time. But again, it was a short period.
Had you planned on staying on at Harvard for your MD, or had you thought about other places?
Well, I would have liked. I wanted to, and that was where I wanted to. Of course, if I hadn't gotten that, I would. I thought of other places, yeah. But fortunately, accepted, which is nice.
So that was 1937?
30, you see, I started there in 37. And
so there was a 4-year period during which you were working on your MD. I'd like to talk somewhat about those experiences and then look at the changing larger political scene, and the situation in Europe was deteriorating at that time, and whether that had any, whether you were aware of it, whether that influenced you, or...
Well, everybody was terribly aware, obviously. But the... frankly, the remarkable thing I found was that how much people went about their education knowing this, being, you know, upset by it, but not, but just going, it's rather remarkable thing, that kind of just going ahead with what they, parenthetically, in many ways, I think, well, not in many ways, but in terms of what you were saying, I think at City College, I think people were, there was much more of an obvious awareness because people were, I think partly because people were personally so involved in the economic depression, you know, the enormous impact that had in this country, as well as the fact that things were obviously unraveling fast in Europe. So, but at the medical school, it was, I think it was, except in a small group. And when you mentioned it, it was much less apparent. I think partly because the medical school, I don't know the figures, but probably had many more people from across the country than Harvard College did. I mean, Harvard College, you had at least a fair number, a very large percentage of people from the Eastern Seaboard, and I mean, people that I knew. At the medical school, I think you had many more people from just across the country. It was a small school. So, yeah, so I think I would say at the medical school there was much less, there was a much more, whatever you mean by that, conservative environment among the student body. Yeah.
What was Harvard Medical School like in 1937?
Well, it was a terrific place, too, as you know. It was, I guess scientifically, it was, except for a few departments, unfortunately, you know, I got involved in those, it was not as, it was perhaps less less scientific, perhaps, than it is now. I mean, now it's one of the, by itself, it's a center of scientific, basic scientific mm-hmm. research. And whereas at that time, I think Cambridge was more in this line. Fortunately, the biochemistry course was given by Baird Hastings. I don't know if you knew him at all.
I know the name.
And I was very close to him and worked in that department over the years. And in terms of what you said, he did have a very strong influence on me. He was a very young. He had lectured in Cambridge. I remember first hearing him. He also, I think, was about 29 when he became a professor, chairman of the department. And so at this time, he was in his early 30s. And he took an extreme interest in teaching and in the individual student. If someone had, being anecdotal, if someone had one of the students had a minor accident in the laboratory, and I know he called them up at night and tried to make sure he was all right. He would take a very, very great interest in every student. And so this was 1941. He was unfortunately No, this was 1937, before that. So fortunately, he was there later on. He was quite involved in the war effort and had to go to Washington, but that did not affect this. And his course, I found very, 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 very stimulating, very good. The lectures perhaps were, again, I could appreciate it a little more because of the background I had at Harvard College in the sciences. I think some of the medical students who did not have this kind of a background and really were only interested in the practice of medicine could not understand why nomograms of the interaction of the hemoglobin and CO2 and oxygen were really relevant. And of course, in retrospect, this was very silly because obviously I always like to say that the biochemistry, looking back on it, is the clinical medicine of 20 years later. And now what we learned then in biochemistry was considered a little esoteric is now so well accepted in clinical medicine that you usually find it in the clinical books and not in like acid-base equilibrium mm-hmm. and not in the biochemistry books. So it was an extremely good course. Then we had a very good one in physiology Walter Cannon, who's, you know, one of the sort of classic names in physiology, was chairman of the department and lectured. And so those two courses were particularly good.
Do you use a text in biochemistry?
Yes, no, hardly. That was rather striking at the time. There was a text called Bedansky.
Oh, yes.
But it was the best there was. But surprisingly, there was no really good text in biochemistry. And so it depended mostly on the lectures. It wasn't until considerably later that there was some good text. I think there was another one, Hawk and Bergheim, that some groups used, but our course was basically on the lectures. And we had some, it was a very nice laboratory, including both that and physiology, in which the students actually even did some real problems, like exercise or water balance. And we used the Haldane and physiology. Hastings in particular pushed a session using the Van-Slyke manometric apparatus with small groups, and he got personally very involved. And it was a very exceptional course, and I think much better than, from what I hear, of biochemistry courses anywhere else in the country, but I'm expressing that from a biased point of view. We did have gross anatomy, and surprisingly, I did well enough in that to be a prosector next year, which was, I've forgotten what the details were, but gross anatomy was what you'd expect, was very dry, but interesting. And histology, which again was before all the new, you know, all the new materials, before electron microscopic work and so forth, but still was done well. So all in all, it was a very good year.
If I recall correctly, Bedansky's book was titled Physiological Chemistry rather than Biochemistry.
Either that one or Hawk and Bergheim was called. One of them was called Physiologic Chemistry, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think this was American biochemistry was considered physiological. I mean, it's a semantic thing, but I think it was from that point of view. And except that it had all the tutorial and so forth, and we did get lectures on it, but the books, for example, would not reflect in any way all the work that was being done in, at least I don't remember it being done in Europe on enzymes and, well, not all the Lavarberg work and so forth. So as I say, we did have a book, but I don't think, my recollection is we really didn't use the book, but mainly lectures. We had a number of very good people. Subaru, who later went to Lederle, and Ollie Lowry, who later was, I got to know more, and was chairman of pharmacology at Washington U. John Taylor lectured. Cyrus Fisk, who with Subaru first discovered phosphocreatine and gave some lectures. So all in all, it was quite a good course, and as I say, better than most medical school, than I think all medical school courses in this country. In fact, it was one of the better biochemistry departments in this country.